I'm here sitting on a really nice patch of grass with Brendan Bragg, who is a Guelph local. Brendan, please share with us your experiences protesting at the G20 Toronto protests this past late June 2010.
Well, it's kind of hard to know where to start. My protest started on Friday, which I guess was the 26th or the 20th. It was the 26th.
25th?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the 25th. Friday evening? You were there?
Yeah, Friday evening. We met with the protest just south of Dundas on Yonge and proceeded with them to a park that was just off Sherbourne and Girard. And overall, it was a peaceful protest. The police were nice. The people were nice. I only saw one person actually get tackled by police. Also happened to notice that he shoved the cop first. So the chanting of let him go just didn't really work on the police at that time.
Yeah, but there was a lot of people who were tackled who didn't even initiate anything.
Yeah, exactly. But coming into it, this is what I was seeing. And so at this point, still believing that the cops are just doing their job and everything's going to go by smoothly in the day to come. But yeah, so on Saturday, me and my friends approached the protest at college and university around 2 p.m. We entered into the protest about halfway through the actual crowd and saw all kinds of people from all walks of life and different cultures. So it started off as just a peaceful protest, and we ended up heading south on University and then west on to Queen. And on our walk, I noticed pretty much every north and south street was barricaded in by police, as if we were being directed on which way we were allowed to be going, which, you know, was not clear to anybody on, you know, how far we can go. But around Queen and John, me and my friends had to stop so that they could pick up some batteries from the Shoppers Drug Mart. While waiting for my friend, about half of the protest actually had passed us and headed further west towards Spadina. And I noticed the police line that was blocking John actually backed up several feet, seemingly letting the other half of the crowd move south. The crowd trying to yell to the first part of the crowd, which is now at Spadina, to come back. The second half started to head southbound on John Street, but within seconds they were shoved back and people started screaming and yelling, but were pretty much, what I'm trying to say is, at Queen and John, the police actually backed up to let half of the crowd through, thus separating the protest into two halves and making it much, much weaker. So trying to think ahead and getting away from that particular spot, we headed towards Spadina with the first half of the crowd, where we were stopped on Spadina by about what started as about 50 police officers. So for about 2 hours, we sat chanting, you know, peaceful protest and other things like that. It was actually quite peaceful, but what I didn't know, no more than a stone throw away behind me, what the two cop cars were ditched by police. You know, with 160 police blocking our small crowd, there's no reason that those cop cars had to be left behind. You know, and I'm not talking about what videos say or what documentarians say. I was there within a stone throw. There was enough police to protect those two cars, and they chose not to just stand down and not do anything. Slowly but surely, the crowd started to get a little bit more amped up, and eventually the police started to shove and push people back. At this point, we left ourselves and headed back up to Queen, where I noticed the police cars. We took a few photos, but, you know, trying to keep our heads straight, knowing that if we touch these police cars, they could be fingerprinted, and we don't want to have any part of that, so we continued to move west. At this point, whatever damage was done was already done. Windows were broken, a couple headlights. People were now kind of just sitting on them, playing with the headlights. You know, whoever the people were that broke them were just a quick smash and grab in and out. I did notice that on those two particular police cars, the letters TAV were on the backs of all those vehicles, and I'm not positive, but I believe that they're telecommunication vehicles. There was no police vehicle that was ever left behind. You know, if you ever saw one cop car, you'd see a dozen, except for these few exceptions who all happened to have the same signature on the TAV. Right. These police vehicles also didn't have their police riot bumpers. No radios were inside of them. And walking through the streets, moving further downtown, you'd see these cars just left there by themselves with no one watching them. But these vehicles that said TAV were the only vehicles that were left unmanned, as if waiting to be destroyed. I mean, and can you really blame, you know, 20,000 pissed off people? You know, it's kind of what's going to happen.
What does TV
I tried to look it up, and I couldn't actually find it for Toronto Police, but the best I can get is a telecommunications vehicle, just maybe for radios or things like that. Yeah, like it wasn't an actual emergency cruiser, therefore it doesn't have the shotgun inside, doesn't have the, you know, the police computer or anything like in that, because it's just like sort of a secondary vehicle. They're not really used.
Were they old?
Yeah, and see, they were all old. Some of them still had the old police logo prints, mm-hmm. and then some of them did have the new prints on them, but even those ones didn't have their bumpers, mm-hmm. like the emergency bumpers, which pretty much every cop car has.
So they were old ones that they're desperate for banking in on insurance companies.
That's just it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm telling you what I saw. You can judge your own opinion on it. Find out what's right within you. So we ended up on Bay Street within no more, but 150 of us were about 10 feet away from another 2,000 protesters. But from both sides, we were being blocked by police. A line of police was facing us, 150. 10 feet away was another line of police stopping about 2,000 protesters. They would not let us join together. There was nothing in the center of that 10-foot radius that the police needed to protect. They just didn't want to give us that edge. So we stayed there for maybe about a half an hour, realizing that they're not going to let us through. Me and my friends actually stopped to get food and regroup ourselves, you know, get out of our soaking clothes, which, you know, two of us didn't have anything dry. Then we thought, we finished our lunch, that we would head to Queen's Park to see what was going on there. So at this time, it's probably about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so the protest that was beaten down by police probably happened a couple hours prior. Obviously, with us right downtown, we didn't know this. We got stopped on College Street by a police line from the Waterloo Police, who weren't particularly rude to us. They were being nice, so it made everybody feel calm, like no one was angrily protesting. There was only about 30 or 40 of us, I think you'd agree, that were standing that line. But you could see rows of police vehicles and Greyhound buses that were all right behind them, and I couldn't help but wonder, like, yeah, they may be nice, but what's going on behind us? Why aren't they?
This was the Saturday.
This is the Saturday. I didn't think that was an act. Like, earlier in the day when we met with the crowd, those vehicles weren't there, so it's not like it was an actual pit stop or a checking point for the police. Something had happened. So me and my friend, after about 2 hours, we left there and headed to Spadina Street, where we met two more friends, and then rushed back to Yonge and King trying to find the protest. Once again, we got stopped from being allowed to join the protest by a row of police, which very quickly our numbers grew from both sides, so the police ended up having to lay back and let us in. At which point, the protest headed east on King. We cut down a small side street and ended up looping back onto Front and, I believe it was Front and Bay, where we sat down and a few people got up to speak their minds and to let us, you know, just to voice to the police what we were doing there and that it was a peaceful protest. It started to rain on us. I'm not really too quite sure myself on why we left there. I mean, one of the first people said, we're not leaving until someone from the G20 comes down and explains themselves. We all know damn well nobody's coming down to explain themselves, but at least we were at the front line. We were right at the gate. This would be where we would stay until, you know, the end of the night. But for some reason, we headed south and then further west on a street called Esplanade, where we stopped in front of the Novotel Hotel, which I had never heard of at the time, but was really quickly trying to get some answers for myself and found out that there is a strike that was happening at that time regarding, I believe, unfair practices by management owners. Like I said, I was trying to learn on the spot what it was I was doing there.
So the hotel workers were on strike?
Yeah, but to the best of my knowledge, there was no actual picket line there. Right upon showing up, there were 5 emergency task force officers that had stopped us from moving any farther east, which I found weird why this small contingency, I guess would be the word, of police officers are guarding the Novotel. Or are these cops not with their other 50 or 60 people guarding their lines? But within minutes, probably about 300 of us were barricaded by what seemed to be about 600 police officers. By my opinion, I'd say we were outnumbered at least 2-1, 3-1. It was insane. And one of the ladies from Montreal, who was speaking on her loudspeaker, really quickly got into an argument with police and was taken away. So that was kind of our voice at the moment. And then two police officers stepped out of their line and asked to speak with somebody who was in charge. There was no one in charge. You know, myself am no better than anybody else, but I had a few friends there that I was worried about and stood up to speak with the police to see what I could do to get my friends and perhaps everybody else out of the circle, which we were being barricaded. The police asked me about why we were there, and I explained as much as I could about what was going on at Novotel. He asked me if there was any people actually picketing or on strike at the moment. I said, I'm not sure, you know, maybe we can ask. And the two police officers walked away from me very quickly. And then, I don't know, you look up the definition of terrorism through Wikipedia, you know, promoting terror to scare the opposition into doing what you want. Then this can be orchestrated in many ways. The way the police did that night is without warning, without giving any, we were never told the way that we would be allowed to leave. They literally just surrounded us and started smashing their shields, stomping towards us, always left foot forward. Like it wasn't a normal walk, it was a march. And every few feet they would stop. And then a small line would open, and about four or five police officers would run through, grab only about two people, so it would be about five officers on two guys, and would run them back behind the police line. At this point, the entire protest is now on their knees, holding their peace signs up, yelling, the whole world is watching. And this didn't seem to faze the police at all. They just continued to opening up their walls, running in and dragging people out, running in and dragging people out. I was doing my best to try and keep, I wouldn't say that anyone was being aggressive trying to stop police from taking somebody. I mean, rightfully so, but I was trying to keep the people at it just so that they wouldn't, hoping that they wouldn't get arrested as well. And at which time, you know, two officers had dragged one person away and looked back at me and they said, I'm sorry, man, but we've got to take you in. You're under arrest and being charged with the breach of peace. As well, three of my other friends were arrested, one of which was charged with unlawful assembly and obstructing a peace officer. I mean, I had to post $1,000 bail and will be going to court for the next little while. And I've heard rumor that if he gets found guilty, he will be considered an eco-terrorist and will be on the no-fly list. My friend in particular was peaceful and silent, as he always is. He doesn't have a combative bone in his body. And I'm, once again, my opinion, shared as well by him, is that out of all the people that were in these cells, which I'm going to go on about in a minute, that were locked up, it was only the most peaceful ones, or the ones that weren't raising any trouble, that were singled out, because these police know that they can lay these charges on, or mistreat you, or for some women were threatened to be strip searched by male cops. Why? Because they knew that they wouldn't be on the evening news the second they got out. They thought that they would be too scared.
Mm-hmm. Your friend didn't instigate anything?
No, no. And he told me the whole thing he tried to do was close his eyes and think, if I can sleep now, that's 8 hours out of the way. You know, he never argued for water. He didn't, yeah. But he was one of the few that was given his phone call on account of he was being charged right off the bat. I do know that unlawful assembly was the charge that was written on his papers when he was detained with me at Novotel. And when he was released, breach of peace officer was added on to that. I have photos myself that show him just being picked out of a small crowd of about 15 people, all of them with their hands in the air, holding their peace symbols. He was doing the same thing as them. Whereas myself, when I was locked into the first section, one of the holding cells with about 40 other guys, you know, at this point I wasn't too distraught about it. You know, I'm still trying to figure out what my rights are, because these rights aren't exactly posted on our cereal boxes. So I believe that we were just going to be held for a few hours, processed and released. I guess before I carry on, Cable Pulse, I guess they had a reporter that was arrested as well at Queen's Park. And when he was released, they allowed him or another reporter to come into the jail cells, or the cinema theater, whatever it's called. And when they got in there, he explained that he went from Section 1, which is a holding cell of about 40 people, into Section 2, where his stuff was brought, and he was strip searched because the police said that they thought he had a weapon. Now, keep that in mind, that they thought bad enough of him to strip search him because they believed he had a weapon. So after he was strip searched, he was brought into Section 2, which was a roughly about 10 foot by 15 to 20 foot cell, or dog cage, pretty much with what he said was 12 other guys, and then was released at 3 o'clock in the morning. They showed sandwiches sitting on the floor, and they said he agreed that water was scarce, but as you can see, there are sandwiches lying everywhere. Food came when water came. If the water was scarce, that means the food was scarce. The fact that sandwiches were thrown were the fact that you can't feed people on this for 24 hours. I was given 3 small Dixie cups of water and 2 sandwiches in the 19 hours that I spent in there, asking for water and a lawyer every time a cop walked by me. Also, I was verbally denied my phone call. I do have that officer's badge number. Her exact words were, "I don't care, I'm not dealing with you," when she walked away while me asking for my phone call.
The City Pulse fellow was...
Oh, sorry, I got kind of sidetracked. In that video, they also showed oranges and apples and things like that. Not one prisoner that I'd met.
And he was detained, and he was saying...
He was testifying that there's food everywhere, but water was scarce, so almost giving some to take some away. Now, how was he released at 3 o'clock Saturday morning? I wasn't strip searched, because they didn't think I had a weapon, but I was held for 19 hours, and... The no media shows you Section 3. They stop at Section 2. Section 3 was a 6-foot by 8-foot dog cage where I was placed with up to 10 other grown men at a time. As well, saw many lines of cages where there'd be 6 or 7 girls curled up on top of each other with no jackets, no sweaters, freezing. They looked like kitten litters in a humane society. We were actually rounded up like cattle. I mean... Yeah, I may not be able to put into words exactly what my rights are, but I'm pretty sure, you know, leaving 8 grown men in a 6-by-8-foot cage with the air conditioning on, never shutting off the lights, with next to no food or water for 24 hours at a time, I'm pretty sure that's against the law. But this doesn't get shown on the media. I mean, my opinion, I don't believe that the CD Pulse guy was in on it by any means, but I believe that he was released only seeing so much so that... He could tell the rest of the general public that things weren't as bad as
the real public. And encouraged to show some positivity.
Exactly. So yeah, on Sunday morning around roughly 10 a.m., I lost all track of time. I don't think anybody really slept in those 24 hours. I heard a girl yelling that people were protesting outside waiting for us to be released. At this point, I was sitting down with my head in my laps, you know, with 8 other guys in the cage. We hadn't even spoken to each other in hours because we were just so distraught. I jumped to my feet and proceeded to shake my cell, kick my cell, chant, yell, and scream endlessly. I went for about 4 hours, rattling my cage until pretty much every cage down my line was shaking from everybody else screaming and yelling. And I demanded my phone call. And to be released until I was actually given my phone call after it literally took about 3 hours of the worst words coming out of my mouth, which, you know, it's regrettable that I had to come to that. Like, what about reason, logic, and rights? Why do I have to belittle people to get what I want? It's insane. But finally, after 19 hours, I was released and walking out. And I regret this so much, still telling some of the police officers outside that it's okay, you're just doing your jobs. A couple of those police officers did recognize me, and I recognized just their faces, but didn't know when I saw them. And they just had a look of disgust with themselves, like their chins were down, and they gave a small nod and tried to not make actual acknowledgement to me. Right when I got out, there was maybe about 60, 70 people that were cheering us on. They had all brought food and water, were offering drives to... anybody who was just released from being detained. But after a few hours, my friends weren't coming out. So I asked a police officer that was on the line, is there any other reason why someone might have been detained farther? Like, pretty much just looking for an answer on when are my friends getting out. And the cops, pretty much his exact words were, I've told this person, I've told that person, I'm not going over it again. And I screamed at him, saying, well, now I'm... sorry, I gotta not swear for this, right?
Don't worry about swearing, like, if it's appropriate context.
Okay, well, I lost it on that single officer. I mean, after everything that they put us through, you know, how dare you sort of shoo me off? I mean, I've been in hell for the past 24 hours. And granted, like, the vast majority of people that were in there, they can handle it. It's not the end of the world, but this is what we have to look forward to if we don't stand up to it. this is going to be everywhere. In third world countries, they have to undergo these for months on end, you know, not being told why they're being detained and why they've been arrested, or they can't, you know, they're denied their phone calls. And while some countries are fighting for their civil rights for the first time, we're slowly losing them. You know, whatever you believe, just care enough to look into it yourself. Mm-hmm. And don't just take anybody's word for it. Don't take my word for it. Listen to what I've said and look it up yourself. You know, if you choose not to believe me, try and prove me wrong. So yeah, that's pretty much my story. My friends are still traumatized in their own way. I have a female friend who used to be very strongly opinionated towards what she believed to be right, and now is scared to death to even speak her mind. And I believe that that is a price that someone really should have to pay for. I mean, yeah, how could you put a cost on that? If a person is literally scared to speak their mind in what you call a free country, or what the people at home believe to be a free country. And we all believe we're free, but someday you're going to be upset about something enough that you're going to try and speak your mind. And that'll be the day that your eyes are open to the fact that they're not listening and we don't have the rights that we believe we do. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brendan.
You're welcome.